Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Ion Travel with Peter Greenberg ad-free and right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
This is the Ion Travel Podcast with CBS News travel editor Peter Greenberg.
Hi, everybody. Peter Greenberg here with another edition of the Ion Travel Podcast. This week from Nairobi in Kenya with two very special guests. The African continent has 54 separate independent countries, but getting from one to another is often a challenge because of antiquated air rights between those countries. The concept of open skies is, in many cases, just a concept, and it hasn't happened in Africa yet. And only a few African airlines are even profitable, and this even as tourism numbers start to soar. So I sat down with Alan Kilavuka, the CEO of Kenya Airways, to get his take on the situation in Africa and also to the U.S.
Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Get up to 30% off well-crafted and personalized gifts from participating shops until May 12th. This year, embrace your creative side. You know, the side your mom gave you. And shop Etsy for custom jewelry, style pieces, home decor, and extra special items she'll adore. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Alan Kilavuka, welcome, sir.
Thank you very much, Peter.
You know, I'm going to date myself now, because when I first came to Kenya in 1981, You had 3 707s, one DC-9, and a couple of Fokkers.
Yeah.
And that was it, right?
That was it.
And those were not new 707s.
No.
They were hand-me-downs.
They were hand-downs.
You've come a long way since then.
We have.
I mean, I remember when you started service to the United States. What year was that? 2017 or 18?
2017.
Yeah. With Dreamliners.
Yes.
And you got more on order.
Correct.
So the real question that everybody wants to know is, you know, how do I get to Kenya? Because connectivity in Africa or within Africa is still a big issue, right? Countries are very, you know, it's protectionism or sovereignty. Open skies is still not really being followed the way it should be. And I would like to think that it's sort of anti-competitive because you have 54 countries in Africa. You don't have 54 airlines. Mm-hmm. You have about 33, mm-hmm. if I last count, mm-hmm. right? Actually, maybe 32 because mm-hmm. South African Airways said right. goodbye in 2020.
No, it's still flying.
I know, but not the way not what
not
you
the
know.
Way it was before.
No. So, from your perspective in the CEO position, mm-hmm. how do you do one thing? Routes to the United States, mm-hmm. other than New York, mm-hmm. right? And routes within the region that connects everybody.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Peter, thank you very much. You started right in, right? Started with connectivity, but you're right. Kenya Airways has been here a long time, 46 years old, so very proud of that legacy. And unfortunately, the problem we have is scale in Africa, scale of the airlines. Now, you spoke about open skies or liberalization, but that's just one of the many concerns that we have as people who run aviation in Africa. In my mind, the bigger issue is scale. Okay, you mentioned 33 airlines. I mean, if you look at the number of actually dormant airlines, you actually have a lot more than that. No, a lot more than that, right? So you're talking about over 100 airlines. Some of them are not functioning. I mean, most of them are, and so on and so forth.
But you can't count an airline if it's not functioning.
That's correct. So what? Or some with one aircraft, right. two aircraft, and so on and so forth. As you know, in aviation, you need scale. You need scale so that it helps you from the economics point of view. It makes the airline unit costs of service much lower. The problem is that if you're subscale, you become, by definition, more expensive. Now, that is coupled
with... And less competitive.
So that is coupled with poor infrastructure, you know, airports and navigation and so on and so forth. So that increases your cost of operation. And then we have, many, many countries, they levy taxes because they see aviation as a
revenue generator.
Exactly. So, and in Africa, as you know, Africa is the second largest continent in the world. And connectivity through other means, through rail, through roads, is not as good. You know, in fact, there's a lot of deficit there. So the only way for me to get from here to Lagos, or the most effective way to do that, is to fly, not by train and not by road. So aviation is a necessity in Africa. But because of infrastructure deficits, because of taxes, because of subscale, it becomes more expensive. And so it discourages growth and it discourages people to fly.
But it's almost like a vicious circle because it keeps...
It is a vicious cycle.
So how do you break that?
So you have to start somewhere. So in my case, for example, we talk about we need to consolidate the fragmentation of airlines. So we have been having discussions with South African Airways, which is not, it's subscale like we are. Any airline that, in my mind, is less than 100 aircraft is really subscale.
Today,
right?
How many aircraft do you have?
So today we have 38 operating aircraft. Then we have a subsidiary which has 7. That is still subscale, okay? So we need to grow this up to something that is more substantive. 100, like I said, 100 plus aircraft. And then that way you share costs. That way you make economies of scale. That way you share information, training, maintenance, and so on and so forth. Then you reduce the cost of travel. We also need to convince our governments to improve the infrastructure. Okay.
Well, I would think, so here's my question. You would think, given the power of travel and tourism and the average GDP that it provides, mm-hmm. that it would not be lost on governments that if you don't have airlift, the economy suffers.
That is true. I think maybe our countries have been satisfied with just enough, right? Because, for
that's
example,
not a good branding message.
Yeah. and that's the truth, because if you look at the how many tourists are we talking about in Kenya, for example, we talk about between 1.5 to 2 million visitors. How many tourists do you talk about in Paris, just Paris alone? Talk about 30 million, okay? So if we improved our infrastructure, if we improved air travel and so on, that could grow. At least let's double that, right? Let's at least double that in the short run and encourage traffic between us and the rest of the world. And we have a problem as well. I mean, let me give an illustration I'm talking about taxes and levies. So on average, travel within Africa, we levy something we call a passenger service charge, an equivalent of something in Europe and in the US. that is at least double. So if I fly from here, a one-hour flight into Entebbe,
In Uganda,
that's $50 departure tax, and then $50 back. Now, as you know, in many places in Europe, that's the cost of travel.
Right.
Yeah, that's the cost of a ticket.
Yeah.
So our argument is, why don't you at least domesticate? You talked about liberalization. Domesticate regional travel. So we remove these taxes, and the cost of travel can drop from today, which is almost triple that amount, to $60, maybe $100 maximum. It will encourage more people.
And you got those taxes gone? Not yet.
Not yet. We're having discussions about this. Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's one big problem, right?
That's one big problem.
The other big problem, which, by the way, I think is an opportunity. I'm a huge fan. Mm. You're going to laugh when I say this, of Fifth Freedom flights.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to laugh. That's a good one.
I mean, if you take a look at the example of Ethiopian, mm-hmm. 2 years ago, if I wanted to go from Los Angeles to Dublin, mm-hmm. I could fly Ethiopian. Mm-hmm. Who knew that, right? Mm. And then they went on to Addis Ababa, right? Mm. Today, they have a flight from New York on Ethiopian to Abidjan, mm-hmm. and then on to Addis. Mm-hmm. So they're opening up other parts of Africa with an airline that's not based in the Ivory Coast. Mm-hmm. I would think that that's a great opportunity for you to do that.
Yeah, we do have Fifth Freedoms as well. I mean, we for example, we fly from here to Lusaka in Zambia, to Harare in Zimbabwe. We are working on one from South Africa into Lilongwe, into Nairobi. We do a lot of Fifth Freedom in the West Africa from Accra and Ghana into Freetown and Libreville. So yes, we do have some Fifth Freedom, and they are very helpful, like you said.
Yeah.
Because many of those countries don't have airlines, and doing this help is very special.
And then there's one more thing that's happening now, which I don't think anybody anticipated, and that's the huge explosion in travel after the pandemic.
That's correct.
I mean, every airplane in the United States is full.
Yeah.
Airfares are at near historic highs.
Yes.
I mean, the round-trip airfare from New York to London right now is $2,300.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, how do you compete in that environment?
Yeah. No, the same thing is happening here as well, right? So there's a lot of demand for travel. You mentioned New York. Our New York route is full. Okay? So you can't get space into New York. That's a good problem. The concern we have, in fact, is the lack of capacity, because I'll give you an example. So we have one of our aircraft, which has been down on maintenance since September.
A 787?
A 787, because there's no spare parts.
It's a supply chain.
It's a supply chain issue. So now we have a different problem. I mean, initially we didn't have enough passengers. Now we have too many passengers. Then now we don't have capacity because, we don't have, we have a supply chain problem. So, aviation is very interesting. There's always something to worry about and something to deal with.
And you have to anticipate that and budget for that.
Now, how do you anticipate for lack of spare parts? You can't.
Yeah.
How do you budget for COVID, for example, COVID-19 pandemic? You can't. So I had a discussion yesterday. I said, this is probably one of the most complex industries that you would have anywhere in the world.
Exactly. So taking a look through your crystal ball, mm-hmm. right, we see all these passenger numbers just rising and rising and rising. Mm. Is that sustainable?
No. It's not sustainable. I think it's pumped up demand. Most of them are premium leisure, okay, who have not traveled maybe for a couple of years now. They have saved and so on, so they're traveling. So that's going to go down for sure. The flip side to that is that we don't see as much corporate traffic, particularly premium corporate traffic, as we saw in 2019.
And that was high yield.
That's high yield as well. So that might replace, maybe not one for one, but that might replace the premium leisure traffic.
So going down the road, as you're seeing traveler behavior changes and traveler purchasing choices change, I happen to agree with you. You can't sustain this, but it does have to be redefined.
Yes.
Because a lot of business travelers who are traveling, mm-hmm. because in this era where you can work from anywhere,
right.
they can extend their trip and just stay in that location for another week.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So a couple of things. I mean, for us, we are kind of, should I say lucky or not? So
Lucky. Go ahead.
It's not really luck, because it's a bad thing on its own. Because, the Africa is not developed. I mean, it's not mature yet. Aviation is not mature. We only have about 2% of global air traffic.
That's it?
That's it. 2%. And remember, this is
a big continent
with about 18% of the global population. So completely playing below our radar. So that needs to grow, and it's going to grow, and it's growing.
But what's going to lead the growth? Small regional carriers?
No, well, everything together, I think, right? Because this is a big continent, so you need both small regional carriers. We also need larger airlines to transport people. I said lucky because we are now implementing something called Africa Continental Free Trade Area. So remember, when we are saying aviation, we're not just talking about people, we're talking about goods as well. We're talking about cargo. So there's a lot of cargo that's going to be moving within the continent, which supplements passenger travel.
Hopefully with some of your spare parts.
Yes, with some of my spare parts. Yeah, so I think that there's going to be growth in and by itself. You know, of course, the West, particularly Europe and America, those are mature markets. There's push to travel more on trains, which is more sustainable from a planet perspective. So probably stagnated, I think. Africa is going to grow. Africa needs more, not less.
But really, you have nowhere to go but up.
Yes, absolutely. Now, of course, this is countermanded by something. Now, there's pressure globally that there should be less air travel because of carbon emissions. Okay, so that makes sense. But it doesn't make sense
but
for
us. But
that's
not going to happen. You know that. I know that.
No, listen. People have made commitments, right? So, okay, we have signed up to net zero by 2050.
But that gets down to sustainable aviation fuel.
Yes, but sustainable aviation fuel is on by itself is a poison chalice. Okay, it's a good thing because, of course, it reduces carbon emissions.
But they're not doing it at cost yet.
But it is increasing the cost either 3 or 4 times, depending on how you're looking at it. Now, in Africa, we're already expensive as it is.
So that makes it even worse.
Yeah, it makes it even worse. And my argument has been, so we are subscale. We emit, I said we are 2% of global aviation. Now, we in Africa, aviation emits between 2 and 4% of global carbon. If you're 2%, that means that Africa emits 0.0002%. Okay? It's nothing. Okay? I'm not saying we should ignore it. I'm saying the bigger priority for us is growth. The bigger priority for us is connectivity. And we can do alternative ways of substituting carbon emissions. We're doing a lot of tree planting. We're doing a lot of, you know, clever, smart travel, recycling, and so on and so forth. That's going to be helpful. Now, if we use sustainable aviation fuel, which we are happy to, we would have to ask that we get help for people who are emitting. I mean, airlines have 800 aircraft. I just told you, we are flying 38 or 40 aircraft. People who are flying 800 aircraft should pay for those ones who are flying 40 aircraft, right? I mean, that's just the way it works.
But then there's the economy of scale. And the bottom line is, I remember when the first color television set came out, it was $2,000. Now you can get a color television set for about $110.
That's true as well. But how long will it take?
Hopefully not as long.
So today, you know, if you look at sustainable aviation fuel, the supply only has 2% of the need. By 2050, we'll need about 450 billion liters of sustainable aviation fuel. Today we have 2%. To scale up to 2050, yes, you're right. You know, as this, of course, it grows and technology changes and so on, it will reduce the cost. But will it reduce the cost to today's prices of fossil fuel?
That's
tough. I doubt it.
So then what's this delicate balancing act you have to do between growing your airline, which means substantial investment in new equipment, new technology, training, not to mention fuel, mm-hmm. right? The intangible, mm-hmm. right? And the world at large, which could be disrupted at any moment.
Yeah. It's a tricky balance. So we have a plan that we divide our plan into 5-year chunks, because that's only the way it makes sense. So we have a long-term plan that says all these wonderful things about growth and so on and 100 aircraft plus. But we have a shorter-term plan of 5 years. During COVID, we even discovered that 5 years is actually long, right? So we even take the 5 years and split it into half. So what do you achieve in the next 2 years and what do you achieve after that? So in the next 2 years for us is to get back to profitability and then from 2017 be sustainable in all fronts, not just from an environmental point of view, but make sure that our balance sheet is strong enough to sustain going forward.
Any U.S. airlines coming to Nairobi?
Not so far, but they're coming through us. we are about to I mean, we've announced a few deals with a lot of big U.S. companies. We have a code share with Delta.
You're part of SkyTeam, aren't you?
We're part of SkyTeam. So that helps. In fact, we're going to strengthen that a little bit further. I think we're going to make an announcement next week. We have also some interlines with a lot of U.S. carriers, JetBlue, I think United as well. So that helps as well, right? So once we strengthen the relationship, particularly with our SkyTeam partners, Delta, it means that there will be a seamless travel from Nairobi into the U.S. through Delta and other U.S. carriers as well.
And right now you're only flying from Nairobi to New York?
Today we're flying from Nairobi to New York. We have a plan. I just mentioned the five-year and so on plan. After 5 years, we're looking at other points in the U.S. We haven't determined which ones yet, probably Washington, probably Boston, and so on. Obviously, we will have to acquire an aircraft that gets there, so it will have to be a Dash 9 Dreamliner. But there's plans for other points in the U.S. as well.
And frequency?
So frequency, that's a good question. So today, because it's peak season now, it's going to be peak season, we're now flying every day.
To New York.
In fact, we have an opportunity to double that, to do a double daily, at least in the short run. So we will go back down to 7 days. If we get double daily, or we get 10, we can do 10, and then go back to 7 and sustain the 7 every day.
And right now, every one of those planes is full.
Now, before peak, before now, they were not full. But we noticed they started filling up mid-May. A little bit directional towards the south. But now going forward, they're full all through until September.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So what about going back to connectivity? If I'm flying New York to Nairobi,
yeah.
Do you have a schedule and a route system that allows me to connect easily in Nairobi to other flights that
yes,
you
have? Yes. There's a clear connectivity from Nairobi to the rest of our points in Africa in particular. And that's why it's important to have the right scheduling and the right timelines. So there's a lot of the connectivity of the U.S. flight connects directly into all our banks to the rest of Africa.
Now I got to ask the indelicate question, Wi-Fi.
Yes.
You knew that was coming.
No, I didn't.
Do you have it on the planes yet?
No, we don't. But we're working on it. Initially, we thought it's not. I mean, we did a survey, actually. Interestingly, we did a survey and it wasn't top of the mind for most of our passengers. But the trend is forcing us to get to that point. Sometimes I think, why don't you just want to relax? I mean, you're flying. Come on, just sit back, read your book and relax. But
you know why? Because people don't change their lifestyle when they change their location.
I think that's true. Yeah.
But from the North American market, look what Delta just did. They're offering free Wi-Fi on every flight.
Yeah.
And that's a market changer.
Yeah. So yes, we are working on it. You know, we have another small problem. Our Dreamliners are the early edition of Dreamliners, so they don't have provisions for the antennas for the Wi-Fi. So we have to retrofit this Dreamliner. So it's quite expensive for us. We were first in the market with these Dreamliners. Now we have to pay for it because they didn't have the technology then. But we're working on it.
See, that's the lesson from the movie Saving Private Ryan. Not a good idea to be in the first wave.
Exactly correct. Exactly correct.
So, how many more planes do you have on order?
So we're getting 2 planes, not on order actually. We're going for used aircraft for now, trying to contain our costs. We want to grow reasonably. We haven't ordered yet, but we have a plan to take. So every year from today for the next 5 years. If you think about it, on average, you're going to have 3 aircraft into our fleet.
So it'll be a while before you get to 100.
Remember I talked about consolidation?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you don't have to get 100 on your own, right? So you could get to 100 with other airlines as well, right? So that's the point, right? So if you, for example, if we get to 50, South African, we currently have about 10 aircraft, they get to 20 or whatever the number is, and then we have a West African carrier getting to 20. So that's 100, right? Yeah, so you get to 100 in the next 5 years.
And if you buy it all together, you get a better deal.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. My thanks to Alan. And now a long conversation with a Kenya lover who also happens to run one of the more unusual hotel and resorts in the world, right in Nairobi. You may be a guest, But that doesn't stop the giraffes from letting you know, in an up-close and personal way, whose house it is. A visit with Mikey Carr-Hartley. They own and operate a very special place, Giraffe Manor.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Mikey Carr-Hartley, how are you, sir?
Good morning, Peter. Thank you.
I mean, this is truly an amazing endeavor. It goes back to the 70s, doesn't it?
Yeah, so it was started in 1979 as a sanctuary. And they brought in the first three Rothschild giraffe from northern Kenya.
And they were already at that point endangered.
100%. At that point, there was 76 left in the wild in Kenya.
Ooh.
Of this species.
And the reason being?
Mainly habitat loss, degradation of the environment, and poaching was the fundamental issue at the time.
And so it was a small start, but a meaningful start.
Correct. And, you know, at the same time, you had Idi Amin using giraffe to feed his army and as target practice. So across the border in Uganda, they were being decimated at the same time, too.
At a rapid rate.
Hugely, yeah.
So, okay, it's one thing to say, let's bring three giraffes in, but what do you do with them? I mean, giraffes take up a lot of real estate.
Well, they do. So Jock and Leslie Melville, the owners of Giraffe Manor, who brought them in, had a Maasai giraffe roaming around. So they knew that the Maasai giraffe and these Rothschild giraffe were able to live in this environment. So they brought them in and they had a huge area to expand, to travel and traverse and feed. So they weren't feeding them per se. But they knew then that they needed to start a breeding program in order to protect this iconic species of giraffe.
And they started it.
They started it there, and then they followed on with the AFU, the Giraffe Center, in 1983, which has been hugely successful at reintroducing giraffe that have been bred at the manor back into the wild. Today, we have 29 or 30 that have been released back into the wild and have increased the population from 76 in Kenya to nearly 1,000 today.
Wow. You know, in so many other areas that they have sanctuaries, they're very quick to tell you that in many cases they don't release the animals back in the wild because they don't think they can survive out there.
Well, these giraffes integrate very quickly with other giraffes. And even when we bring in new bloodlines back into the giraffe center and giraffe sanctuary, they integrate very quickly and become much more relaxed and habituated as wild giraffe, and it works both ways.
And of course, you have some warthogs on the property.
Plenty of warthogs that enjoy the grounds and the nitbits left over.
I'm sorry, but they're my favorite animal because they get no respect. Everybody thinks they're ugly. I think they're quite beautiful. I love the way they run. For those of you who've never seen a warthog run, you'll understand the term hightailing it, because that's exactly how they run, with their tail straight up in the air.
100%. I mean, they are the characters of Africa. And, you know, you just have to watch The Lion King with Pumbaa, and they are definitely, you know, they're the stars of the savannah.
And they're always late for an appointment. I mean, they're 100%. Always, gotta go.
Yeah.
Right? In fact, some of the people who have visited Giraffe Manor, ranging from, my goodness, Walter Cronkite, I think they named a warthog after him.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and then you had Johnny Carson.
Right.
Interesting story about Johnny Carson. He never really traveled very much when he was starring on The Tonight Show, but he was fascinated by Africa and made one trip with his wife and was so taken by it, he took up Swahili. And he learned Swahili. And then came back to Los Angeles and went out and bought a boat and named it Serengeti.
Wow, that's amazing. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I mean, that was his. And he came to Giraffe Manor.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. Ellen DeGeneres, right?
Yeah, she was there a couple of years ago. Just before she was given the Ellen DeGeneres Center in Rwanda. And yeah, she was an amazing lady to have there. Just so cool, so relaxed.
But walk me through what an experience at Giraffe Manor is like, because you don't just show up and check in at the hotel. The minute you walk in, I mean, you are surrounded by giraffes.
Well, the giraffes, you know, they come up to feed at tea time, and they come and, you know, check out who's on the front porch.
Well, what you're saying is it's a different definition of high tea.
Definitely. I mean, it's high tea with,
high
neck. Yeah, 100%. And they're very relaxed. They come in. They love it when we've got kids there. They just love the noise and the chaos there. And then after about half an hour, they decide they're going to go and forage back in the forest again. And then back in the morning when everyone wakes up at dawn, they come back and stick their heads into the windows and have breakfast with you.
And by the way, he's not exaggerating. When I was here on the second floor, I was having breakfast, and the next thing you know, there's a giraffe head on my head.
100%. The big ones, right through the window. can reach the second floor, and they're very good at asking for their breakfast too.
This one didn't ask.
Just whacked you anyway.
Oh, yeah, I got a little bit of a headbutt, yeah. But the thing that most people don't realize until you feed a giraffe is the size and length of their tongue.
Yeah, so it's about 18 inches long, the tongue. And it's very dextile. It can move in all directions. It's fairly coarse as well. And they're after those, you know, we feed them a combination of alfalfa, a little bit of acacia, and some bran pellets mixed in. So it's very nutritious. But they know how to grab those things.
They're going for the eggs.
Yeah.
But let's get serious for a second, because there is the sanctuary work that you do, number one. And number two, it's indicative of what needs to be done throughout the entire country.
Correct. I mean, you know, we're very progressive in Kenya and in Africa, actually, in the protection of bigger open spaces. But key species like giraffe, there's been this thing called the silent extinction. This is, you know, people don't know that the giraffe population has declined by 30% since the 80s. We had 155,000 giraffe in Africa in the mid-80s, and now we're at 117,000. This is primarily due to degradation of the environment, climate change, poaching, any number of these factors.
But is there enough for them to eat?
Depends on where they are. Yeah. That's one of the problems. So with climate change and, you know, destruction of the environment where they live in acacia woodland, it's getting tougher and tougher for them to find good habitat. And they also, remember, they're fairly easy to kill if you're a poacher or you're hungry and you need to feed your family. So it is a huge problem right across Africa.
Cool. Let's talk about some of the other animals that may be still endangered here, because poaching is still going on. Let's not kid ourselves. When we did our special with the president in Tanzania, she took me into a warehouse, which was, I mean, it was just the most depressing. It was sort of like Raiders of the Lost Ark, but with human, with animal remains, all those tusks lined up that they've been able to seize from the poachers.
Yeah, so poaching is still a huge threat. Mainly elephant poaching still goes on throughout Africa, but rhino poaching is a huge problem in southern Africa. But more recently, we have pangolins. You know, pangolins are being poached for their scales and being shipped over to the Far East. We also have, because there's less tigers left in the world, we have lion bones, leopard bones also being used for body parts in traditional medicine too. So it's not just limited to the big elephants and big rhinos that we traditionally know about. It's these other species are suffering the same plight as well.
And part of the work that you do is trying to help that as well.
Correct. Basically partnering with different organizations trying to raise awareness, but also trying to protect these species.
I always want to emphasize that it's not an attraction and it's not a ride. It's not, you're not a theme park, is what I'm trying to say.
100%. It's primarily a conservation-based project, and you know, we're able to support that through guests coming to stay at the property.
We've been speaking to Mikey Carr-Hartley, the co-owner of this amazing place called Giraffe Manor, which I've had the privilege to stay in. And that brings up the word privilege, because if you want to go see the gorillas in Rwanda, be prepared to pay for it. And I think that's intentional on the part of the government there. They want to make sure that they limit the number of people who are going, that the people who are paying for it will appreciate it more. And not only that, that a certain percentage of the money that you're paying actually goes back to the local communities. You're doing that in your lodges as well.
We're doing exactly the same. What the Rwanda model is, you know, you're paying, you get what you pay for. They do an amazing job, and they're able to limit supply because we don't want to overcrowd the gorillas and have them too habituated. And in the same breath, we're trying to do the same. We're limiting the number of people that are able to come to Giraffe Manor and our other properties, because we don't, A, want to dilute the experience of the guests staying there, but also we have a bigger philanthropic arm, which is called Footprint, and it's our Footprint Foundation that has longer reach to the conservation of other species as well as giraffe. And that's key, that you have to have this fundamental backbone in the company to be able to be sustainable for the future.
You know, I remember coming back here in 1985, and then again in 1995 with a group of my friends, and I think they were getting bad advice, because when they got here, they had all brought like pencils and crayons, and I said, why? He says, well, we just want to give it to the kids. I said, what makes you think the kids need that, right? And so to the extent, if you're going to visit in the local communities, which, by the way, I encourage everybody in a very big way to do, find out first what they really need, right?
Find out from the people on the ground. Find out from the communities what they need, what their immediate needs are. It may be as simple as just food or security or a classroom. They don't necessarily need pens and books. This might be what we think they need, but you know, fundamental issues that come to the fore will be brought to you by the tribesmen, the local ladies, the mums, the dads. You know, that's what they know what they need.
I remember on that trip, that discussion happening, because they brought their pencils and crayons, and it was enlightening for them to realize that wasn't going to do the trick.
Yeah.
And what that one village needed way out in the Mara was they needed transportation to get the kids to school, because everybody was walking, and they were walking miles. And so two of the people on our trip contributed enough money to get them a bus. I mean, that was a game changer.
It's, you know, it's the simple things. We don't think about often these things like, how do you get to school? You know, in the Maasai Mara, they're walking past elephants and lions and buffalo. You know, it's the safety of the kids is paramount as well. Once they get to school, that's a different story. You know, that's a more of a government issue. But, you know, it's the, you know, also to when you're at school, you need food to be able to think. If you don't have a full tummy, you can't concentrate for the full day. So it's a school feeding program is much more beneficial, so that the kids get a better education, so when they come out the other side, they are equipped to deal with, you know, today's world.
And a portion of the money that's spent for people to come and spend the night at Giraffe Manor goes right back.
100%. It all goes back. So we partner with, for Giraffe Manor, it goes to Giraffe Conservation Fund, which is a big organization looking after giraffe, to AFU, the Giraffe Center. And then we have individual programs in and around Kibera, where we give to a school in the slums in Nairobi. And then in our other properties, we have more centric programs to their specific areas.
And for my listeners, stay tuned on this, because if you go to our website, petergreenberg.com, we will give you the websites for all of those organizations, so you can contribute before you even get here. You'll be doing a lot of help. What's the biggest surprise? I should have even made this the first question, but when people come to Giraffe Manor, I can speak for myself, but I'm not going to do that. What's the biggest surprise for people when they first get there?
I think the sheer size of the animal when they're next to them and the fact that they do come and do stick their heads through the window. It's not photoshopped. It's not that it happens a one-off. And, you know, they're not being forced to come up. It's there at their own will. And that, I think, is their biggest surprise.
Right. They're not robotic.
No.
You don't have to replace any batteries.
No. It's their instinct and it's what they want to do. And they're free. If they don't feel like coming up, no one's herding them up to come and see the guests at the manor.
And your biggest challenge?
One of the biggest challenges is probably space. You know, we have to relocate giraffes out. We've got a critical mass of about 13 to 14 giraffes. When they, like now you saw yesterday, there was four new babies there. They'll have to be moved out. And the biggest challenge is where to move these giraffes because there are a specific species that need to be kept isolated from other giraffes. So space, once we move them, is going to be the fundamental challenge because the breeding program is doing well, which is a great thing, but that's going to be our biggest problem.
My thanks to Mikey and to Alan Kilavuka, and my thanks to you for listening to this Ion Travel podcast. For more conversations with the world's leaders in travel, as well as answers to your travel questions, be sure to rate and review this podcast wherever you happen to listen to podcasts. And for all the breaking travel news, you know what to do. Just log on to petergreenberg.com.
The Ion Travel Podcast is produced by Amanda Morris and Anthony Protis Chung. For more content from Peter Greenberg and the Ion Travel team, visit petergreenberg.com. Ion Travel is a production of CBS News Radio.
If you like Ion Travel with Peter Greenberg, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Get one of the most successful broadcasts in television history on your schedule with the 60 Minutes podcast. Hard-hitting investigative reports, news, and culture maker interviews, and in-depth profiles are waiting for you in every episode. Listen to 60 Minutes ad-free on Wondery Plus.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and host of the Money Watch podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary and it's not boring. It is a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and maybe more importantly, on your life. I'm going to be your financial coach, someone who brings common sense and an insider's perspective on how to manage your money and your emotions. And I promise we are going to have a little bit of fun along the way. Have a question from retirement to career changes to college funding? Just send us an email at askjill@jillonmoney.com. Follow Money Watch wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app.